Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Mourners passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's October the 13th, 2011. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, that dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune.
Okay, we're going to begin with some internal or housekeeping notes, if you want to call them that. Later on in this program, during my section with Comrade Charles Martel, I make reference to the forthcoming new fourth edition of the Northwest Migration Manual, otherwise known as the White Book, and which at that time I was nattering with Charles was indeed still forthcoming. But I'd like to tell you now that it's done. Finished it this weekend, in fact. The next step will, of course, be some form of printed publication for the White Book, which I hope to achieve through print per order, so that rather than the party incur the expense of hand-printing and binding and shipping these books, interested individuals can simply order them directly online. There will be a PDF version of the White Book online for those of you who don't want to pony up the cash for a hard copy and who don't mind reading long documents on a computer screen. Now, this, of course, means that hostile people and organizations such as our friends in the Silk Suits and the SPLC and the ADL and so forth can also order their own copies, and I'm aware of the risk involved here. The first three editions of the manual I attempted to keep at least somewhat confidential, notably by refusing to put them online where any Tom, Dick, and Harry could see them. Now, once again, please excuse the drama queen stuff. But there does, in fact, exist an entirely real possibility that I may not be in the game too much longer, either because I get busted for last month's Brandenburg lectures or for some other reason. As with Freedom's Sons, Volume 1, I want to make certain that this white book gets into the hands of the racially conscious white community, and that it can never be suppressed or contained in any way by the enemy. I want to make sure that it doesn't end up sitting on my confiscated hard drive in a plastic tub in some FBI evidence locker for the next 50 years until some nigger janitor throws it out to make room for more rubbish. Now, anyone who desires a copy of the fourth edition of the Northwest Migration Manual, otherwise known as the White Book, can email me and I will send you one by email attachment. Now, moving right along, some more internal housekeeping stuff. By now, in my opinion, we have enough people who are inclined in various ways to Northwest nationalism living in certain areas to the point where we need to start getting our local units organized in Portland, in the city of Seattle itself, in Salem, Oregon, and in Kalispell, Montana. Now, if you live in any of these areas, or if you're within reasonable driving distance of those areas, please get in touch with me or with the units themselves, and their contact information is listed in the contact section of the northwestfront.org website. Guys, I say to you again, it's happening. Slowly. Slowly, slowly, maybe too slowly, maybe history will record that at this crucial juncture for our race, we just couldn't get our act together in time. We'll have to see how that plays out. But it is starting to come together, and you need to be a part of it.
Hi guys, this is Axis Sally. First off, for this week, I have a request from Harold for all you junior G-men in the Joint Terrorism Task Force who are following us around and spying on us all the time. Somewhere in your local FBI office, or even back in D.C., you guys should be able to find one of the older agents who remembers how to do a proper J. Edgar-style mail cover like they used to use on our movement all the time back in the old days before the internet, when people actually wrote letters instead of sending emails or cell phone texts. You need to find one of those older agents and ask him to give you some pointers on how to steam open a letter properly, and then once you've read and photographed the contents, seal it back without all that curling and tearing and discoloration along the seam that comes from the steam kettle, and without all those smears and smudges that result from sloppy re-gluing of the flaps with that cheap Walmart glue stick or whatever you're using over in Seattle. Come on, guys, you've been getting really amateurish lately, and it's showing. You're turning out sloppy work. I know you'd rather sit in your cubicles in the air conditioning with your slushy and your hot pockets and just read emails and texts and forward them with a click of your mouse, when you're not listening to my dulcet voice, of course. But I'm sorry, we're not playing. We know, ever since the Patriot Act, you don't have to get warrants to open first-class mail anymore, but still, we're going to make you get up off your lazy asses and do some work. We're going to make you drive through morning traffic and screw around on the sorting floor at the post office and argue with stupid postmasters and postal inspectors over whose political turf it is and who can open what. Then we're going to heckle you when your stumblebum agents are so clumsy they don't even know how to open a letter surreptitiously, replace the contents after a reading, and seal it properly so at least you don't insult our intelligence by delivering mail that looks like it's been pawed over by monkeys. Then again, I suppose in a sense it has been. For that matter, so has all the mail in this country. Where was I? Oh yes, seriously guys, you JTTF hoodlums really need to pull your socks up. Talk to some of those older hands in the Bureau who were involved in COINTELPRO or Operation Vixen or Kilroy was here, and ask them how to do a mail cover right. Or at least get the Bureau to bring some of those old fluoroscope machines out of mothballs if you're too fumble-fingered to steam an envelope open. If a job is worth doing well. Of course, you shouldn't be doing this job at all, but, well, you know what I mean. Now on to another subject. Last week on RFN, Harold talked about the long monologue that runs around in white people's heads and how this program gives you an opportunity to let that monologue out. I know exactly what he means, and I think anyone in the movement does, because we've heard all these monologues in 100 different versions, and yet all telling the same tragic tale of a land and a people betrayed. Time and again, when white nationalists finally do meet one another, out come these long monologues going on and on, describing everything that is wrong in America. At long last, a few of our people, some of whom have been driven almost Looney Tunes by their isolation, can find someone to listen, and years of repressed rage held back in silence comes roaring out like a water cannon. I've heard a lot of these speeches myself, and it seems to me that no matter what the individual person's own story might be, they all have a few things in common. Most often, I find that there is this overwhelming sense of bafflement. The white man or woman knows what they are saying about America is true, but they just can't believe it. You see, things aren't supposed to be this way, and white people can't understand why they are, and why no one does anything about the 101 wrongs that America commits against white people every day. A large part of the Northwest Front's propaganda task is to explain this very thing to white people, to tell them why things are the way they are. In short, to introduce them to the Jewish question. But for now, I would like to add my appeal to Harold's. Find yourself a decent audio program to download, like WavePad or Audacity or something else. Get yourself a microphone. Teach yourself to make a recording of your own voice on your computer. And then tell us your story and send it to us attached to an email in the form of an MP3 file, a WAV file, or a WMA file. And Harold will do his editing thing, work it up into something usable, and play it on the show. We want Radio Free Northwest to be the voice of not just Harold or a couple other people, but a whole new nation. You can get in on that new Northwest nation now, even if it's only by standing up and telling your own story in public. How did you first become racially aware? When did you finally understand about the Jews? How are your own plans for homecoming progressing? What part of the homeland would you like best to raise a family in? Come on, guys, don't be shy. Let's hear from you, literally.
Wow! Wow! Wow!
Let me get my boots.
Okay. All right. A couple of weeks ago, Sally made a comment about a cat that had run into some guy's house, and this idiot white guy called the police because a cat ran into his house and ran out again. And she made some comment, well, you know, Jesus, you know, cat runs in your house, just stomp it. Don't call the cops. What are you, afraid of a cat? But apparently this was totally misinterpreted, and there is this big internet brouhaha going on about how Axis Sally hates cats, and the Northwest Front hates cats, and apparently we are just wicked and evil and, you know, the sons of Satan and everything, and no, 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 you mustn't go Northwest because you'll be asked to stomp on kitty cats. It's just, anyway. You might think that this is kind of a little bit too ridiculous for us to address on Radio Free Northwest, but one thing I've learned in the movement, and one thing anybody who's been in the movement for any length of time learns, is that there is nothing too ridiculous for white people to get all exercised over, as long as it distracts them from the business at hand and gives them an excuse not to get on with it.
Well, you know, I think this cat stomping thing, it's the newest excuse I've ever heard not to come home. Usually people are afraid of the rain, or I think somebody once mentioned bears back, like some bears were going to crawl out of the woods and come kill all the new migrants in the night.
My favorite is the volcanoes.
Oh, yes, the volcanoes. Okay, so there's the volcanoes and the bears, and then now there's this crazy cat stomper. So, wow, yeah, the Northwest sounds like a terrible place to live, doesn't it? I think I'd rather stay in Detroit with all the niggers or in New York with all the kikes.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know what it is with American white people. We just obsess on these petty, weird little points. Like last week I was talking about, I got an endorsement from this Jewish kook on YouTube, and apparently this indicates that I'm part of the world Jewish conspiracy and I'm secretly a rabbi, and it just goes on and on. I mean, sometimes you really get floored by the things that our people will pick up on and just turn tiny little molehills that they will turn into mountains. It's an excuse not to get on with the serious job at hand, because I think the serious job at hand just scares the hell out of us.
And I've been reading a lot of, oh, well, I'm not going to follow Harold's plan if there's going to be that cat killer there. And it just reminds me of a lot of the other things I used to read from people back before I even really became involved in this. Well, I'm not going to go Northwest if these kind of people are going to be there, or if it's going to be all these Christians, or if it's not going to be Christians, or if there's going to be pot smokers, or if I can't smoke pot. And I don't really think people are too concerned with those specific issues. I think the concern is, if I do this, will I have to stop doing things I want to do? Or are there going to be people who do things that I don't like?
There are people who claim to be white nationalists who, seriously now, would rather that the present existing situation continue and that our race continue to die out than share the solution and work in cooperation and accept as equals and brothers and sisters certain white people that they don't like. And so, in that sense, this is actually a very serious issue, because it has to do with our own mindset, our own attitude, and our own character issues, which is what's going to make or break us. It's our own character. We can do this, but we have to stop worrying about whether our comrades are Christians or non-Christians, or have long hair, or hate cats, or whatever the excuse is. We need to stop looking for excuses to not do what we all know has to be done.
And I guarantee that in the new nation, there are going to be people that you don't like. There are going to be people who really suck. There are going to be people you don't agree with, people who do things that you wish they did not do. So, for the good of your race, for a future for white children, are you willing to live in the vicinity of someone with whom you do not agree, or of someone who maybe does things or thinks things that you personally don't like?
Or of a different religion. Well, that's a decision, you know, we all have to make, and I don't want to spend the whole RFN talking about this, and God knows I spend enough time talking about character as it is, but there are people among us who have different quirks. There are some who are Christians, some who are non-Christians, some who like dogs, some who like cats, some who like horses or whatever, and we're a very, pardon the expression, diverse people. You know, we need to learn to not sweat the small stuff. We have a job to do, and it's time we got on with it and did it. In fact, a lot of you have already taken Sally's request to submit your own audio files to heart, We have a number of them that we received this week that we want to play for you. And so for that reason, this episode is probably going to be a bit longer than normal. For example, here's a couple of comments from Comrade James and Comrade Bob. I won't reveal where they're from, but this is the sort of thing we've gotten in response to our appeal.
Hi, my name's James. I'm 20 years old. I just wanted to let everyone in the movement know that's against the idea of the Northwest Front, that they should reconsider because there is no movement besides the Northwest Front. I really woke up when I was 17 years old and I'm 20 now, so that's 3 years and I'm already sick of discussing the same shit over and over again and listening to people say they're on Red Watch tonight or some total bullshit story when the truth is you're just going to be on your computer all night telling other people how dedicated you are because you have some dumb crew patch and you go to a lot of white pride shows. It's ridiculous. And I know I can't really be too hard on these people because I'm not in the Northwest Front yet, so I guess I have no room to talk, but I will get to the homeland before too long. There's no reason for people that truly live the 14 words to not even attempt the only solid idea that has been presented to them. Especially if you have children, I don't see how you would just accept this life for them. And by not moving to the Northwest, that's exactly what you're doing. I have a daughter, and I will not let her grow up in this shit that will actually be 10 times worse by the time she's my age. Why fight small battles within the U.S. when you can be a part of a war that has a chance of victory in the Northwest? I hope I made some people out there reconsider because we're all in this together.
Hello, Harold. I'm a relative latecomer to the movement. I began my own personal awakening on the host of issues facing not only our race but the human species a little more than 4 years ago. About a year ago, I stumbled upon your diatribe about white boys that never grow up on YouTube, and I haven't stopped listening to all of your other diatribes since. That soundbite clip echoed my thoughts exactly regarding the apparent state of disunion among the descendants of our once great European ancestors. Since that time, a combination of my own research and your podcast has rewritten the script which my public school education and Red Brick University indoctrination originally provided me with on a host of the difficult realities which our race faces in these coming decades. I wish that those relatively few which are in the know, like us, could directly communicate to the minds and hearts of all white people that noose-tightening feeling we carry with us wherever we contemplate the future of our people. That one foot in the grave realization that is the gift of knowing the cold hard truth. I'm hoping to speak today on and add my 2 cents to what I hope is pertinent to the subject of your recent so-called Brandenburg lectures. I recently watched The Occupation of Wall Street by what appeared to be several legions of hippies and yuppies, which ostensibly were protesting the bankers, which continue to loot and boot us goyim with impunity. As one of the female regiments was cordoned off like a bleeding contingent of sheep by an orange-colored fabric bearing the words, "Police line, do not cross," a single officer approached the group and calmly began pepper-spraying them en masse. The hippie contingent commenced to assume the fetal position and cry and scream loudly, somehow astonished that those paid to protect and serve would so cavalierly torment them so. Apparently, Americans still think that placing themselves under the jackboots of police as living martyrs will somehow accomplish something. I'm guessing that their belief is that with enough public awareness, the police will stop kicking their peaceful vegan asses. Apparently, they also believe that there is still someone out there that really needs to be clued in to the fact that the police can do whatever they want to whoever they want, whenever they want, however they want in this new America. In all reality, our benevolent masters want their tyranny to be televised. They want us to see what they are doing, and to see that nothing is or will be done to stop their brutality. And the goddamn Kumbaya Brigade is too stupid not to play right into their hands. As I watched, I couldn't help but let my imagination wander. What would have happened if just several people with excellent eyesight had been positioned in key places atop just a few of those buildings, working together with only a handful of operatives, cleverly disguised as tofu eaters among the hairy, useless eaters below? What other, more desirable, results might have been accomplished in this or another incident of its kind? To me, the lesson of hippies versus policemen is clear. Just one person with the will to commit violence and the armament necessary to execute that will is worth at least a gaggle of witless Gandhi wannabes. Even given that we are approaching an event horizon of a process set in motion for our eradication long ago, I remain optimistic, although I know the shrinking majority of Americans and the middle class will still have to suffer much more greatly than they already have before they do anything even remotely approaching the will to correct the course of their own mortgage futures. I am hopeful. Despite the odds, I am also grateful. Grateful that I am alive at a time when our people are at their worst and our circumstances most dire. I am grateful that materialism is leaving more and more people hollow and alienated. Grateful that our counterfeit economy is ever slouching towards its pitiful and wretched end. Grateful that families and children are gleefully torn asunder by both family courts and abortion doctors. Grateful that our cowardly and gagged apostate churches no longer fulfill or even speak to the souls of their congregations. Grateful that everywhere and on every front, our world slips further into varying shades of darkness. I am grateful that a normal, comfortable, and happy life is no longer even a potentiality for the great majority of our kind. I am grateful for these multiplications of evil, because I know the ground of the human spirit. I know that it is at these times when people are deprived and abused of their most basic needs and desires that they become capable of anything, and therefore capable of greatness. I have many affairs to order, but I am beginning to order them now so as to make it home. As more and more of us are deprived of any feeling of home, wherever we may be, I have no doubt that you will have your 1,000 men and women sooner than you think, Harold. I look forward to meeting those other 999.
And now for something truly white and ethnic. This is Walter Forbes.
I'll get a pole, honey. You get a line, I'll get a pole, baby mine. You get a line, I'll get a pole. We'll go down to the crawdad hole, honey, baby mine. Yonder come a man with a sack on his back, honey. Yonder come a man with a sack on his back, baby mine. Yonder come a man with a sack on his back. Got all the crawdad he can pack, honey, baby mine. That man fell down in the butt of that sack, honey. That man fell down in the butt of that sack, baby mine. That man fell down in the butt of that sack. You all seen crawdad back and back, honey, baby mine. What you gonna do when the gold gives up? Gonna stand on the corner with your mouth in the pout, honey, baby mine. Well, what you gonna do when the meat comes in, honey? What you gonna do when the meat comes in, baby mine? What you gonna do when the meat comes in, honey, baby mine? Wake up, Kate, you slept too late, honey. Wake up, Kate, you slept too late, baby mine. Wake up, Kate, you slept too late. The crawdad man done passed your gate, honey, baby mine. Honey, baby mine.
Okay, and we're back for another week with me and Comrade Charles Martel just shooting the shit here on Radio Free Northwest. And I've got my little 3x5 index card from last week wherein I made some notes about all the things we were talking about. We were talking about, I think last week, building the great surveillance state that they show on 24 and Criminal Minds and that sort of stuff and so forth, and the general fear of the government. Charles, also last week when we were sitting in there in my living room, shooting the breeze, he went off on a big, long rap about patriotards. Perhaps Charles can explain what a patriotard is.
Well, yeah, I'll really get into trouble for this one. Well, you know, all these patriot groups running around, you know, I just get this flood of emails nowadays where people are like really suddenly standing up for the white race. And why are we so persecuted? And, you know, a bunch of like Republicans and right wingers and Tea Party types. And they're patriotards because they just don't get it. Their country's falling apart and they suddenly realize there's a problem. And so suddenly they've got the courage to start emailing each other about all the terrible things that are happening to us. And you know what, dude? This is going on 20 years ago, and I was telling somebody the other day that the mid-60s, when I was a total multiculturalist, all of my relatives who were avowed racists were calling me a complete idiot. And the weird thing is, 40, 50 years later, I've noticed that now that I'm a racist and they're multiculturalists, they're still calling me an idiot. But it's the very same people. It's very strange how our positions have actually rotated 180 degrees. And I find that very odd. And I could go on about that for about the psychopathology involved there, but I won't.
Well, a lot of white people in the upper middle class or what's left of the upper middle class are finally starting to wake up to the fact that things are getting bad to the point where they themselves are being personally affected, which is all they care about. And also, they are sufficiently intelligent to look around them, and once they start paying attention to what's going on, it suddenly starts to dawn on them that things aren't going to get better unless something is done. And so, in many cases, I think with the Tea Party and some of these efforts, they're trying to reach out. They're sort of tentatively, hesitantly fumbling with the idea of trying to maybe do something about this mess. And a lot of these guys, by the way, when they've gone through the whole conservative schmear, will eventually come to the Northwest Front. They'll come to white nationalism and white separatism. So it's kind of a learning process. Just like back in my day, virtually everybody that ended up with the old Nazi party had started out in the John Birch Society or the Wallace Movement, something like that. So this is kind of a natural process, and it's going to happen in this generation just like it has in generations past. But I think a large part of the problem is they don't understand what the goal has to be, which is a separate white nation on the North American continent, and they don't fully realize that the present system is completely and totally beyond reform or redemption. I think we're still dealing with, and we're going to for a long time be dealing with, this idea that somehow we are going to find some way to bring back the good old split-level suburban ranch lifestyle with the Brady Bunch and Beaver Cleaver and backyard barbecue and, you know, 4th of July picnics. And it's all going to be a good old American traditional thing with Six Flags and everything like that, except there'll be no Spanish in the background and no black faces. And we'll all live in a sort of endless Pat Boone fantasy. And we'll find some way to do this politely and nicely and without ever hurting anybody and without ever saying nigger. And unfortunately, it ain't going to be like that. That's not the way things work in the real world.
And you're right. And I don't mean to be hard on people that are just starting to wake up, because it took me years. It's going on about 15, 20 years now. My progression to the fact that I realized that Harold is right. It's all going to come to a big bloodbath in the end. But part of the reason is because people are so slow to wake up. But it's still pretty aggravating to have people that really do agree with us, but just don't want to be impolite. Or it's just not polite to say certain things, even when they're kicking down your door. And that really starts to get to you after a while. It makes you just want to bite 10-penny nails into.
Like someone once said that there will never be a revolution in England because to do so would involve being rude to a policeman.
Well, that's for sure. You know, we just don't use those kind of words in polite society. And I got some bad news. Polite society itself is just about to go on the ash heap of history.
Yeah. Well, it's like we get these people who actually are becoming racially aware. I think Charles was saying, well, he now knows people who will tell you that they're not afraid to say white anymore, which is good. I mean, that's certainly a sign of progress, but that's not really where we need to be. We need to get to the point not just where we're no longer afraid to say white, but we need to get to the point where we're no longer afraid to say nigger.
What?
The N-word. The N-word. Okay, I'm coming close to violating the first taboo here, which, as I explained in the Brandenburg lectures, the second taboo in the movement has always been any talk of direct action armed struggle, but the first taboo is always never name names, because basically we've got names that don't need to be named. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm gibbering, but I happen to know certain, shall we say, very strong racial websites that either I write for or other people I know write for, some of their blogs and whatnot, and these so-called white nationalist leaders have banned the word nigger, and in some cases banned the word faggot from their websites. I've asked a couple of these guys, you know, what the hell are you doing? And I can't seem to get any straight answer, but I think a lot of it has to do, especially as these guys get older, they're trying to go up market and they're trying to get into the rented motel banquet room circuit and rip off old people's savings by getting them into gold and silver and all this sort of stuff, which is kind of what old white nationalists do when they realize that you people aren't ever going to do anything and they better start looking to their retirement, but we won't get into that anyway. Believe it or not, the social pressure and the moral pressure that liberal media has brought on American white people as a whole is such that even so-called racists are now afraid to say nigger. And if that doesn't say something, I don't know what does. Look, guys, if I ever get to the point where I am reluctant or afraid to stand right up and say nigger and faggot and call a spade and literally, if I ever get to the point where I seem to be disguising the facts of race or backpedaling on race or the Jewish question in any way like that, you guys have my permission to shoot me because I will have gone totally senile and I need to be put out of my misery.
Well, Harold, you know, I don't really mind you using racial epithets, but when you start talking about construction equipment, I draw the line at that.
Construction equipment?
Spades.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, right. Okay.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh, it's okay. One more thing. Hiding out. This is interesting. This is kind of like an internal movement thing. We do get accused periodically of, quote, hiding out here in the Northwest. Now, there is a sort of a diffused opinion running throughout our little community that the only way that I will ever really prove the worth of the Northwest idea is that somehow, someday, there's going to be this big white mob in a park or something here in Seattle or wherever, and I am going to jump up on a picnic table, possibly wearing a nice suit and tie, if you're more a market type, possibly wearing a kind of a costume with a little cape, if you're more old-fashioned, whatever. Anyway, so I'm going to make this big, long speech, and I'm going to incite the mob to storm the Bastille, and we're all going to march downtown and take over the government, and all problems are just going to disappear in a puff of smoke, and everybody will be able to go home and sit down on the TV and flip the remote and, you know, go back to watch Dancing with the Stars or whatever. It just, in other words, unless I'm sort of leading some sort of mob on the Bastille, I'm not really doing anything, I'm hiding out, etc., etc., and again, it just doesn't work that way in the real world. Guys, I can't do these things on my own. I do not have any magic beans hidden away in my pocket that will suddenly cause the beanstalk to leap up out of the ground. I can do nothing on my own except what I do on a daily basis and what I have done. I can give you knowledge, I can give you the benefit of my experience, I can talk about history with you, I can give you the propaganda to use, we've got a good website, we've got the Northwest Novels, we've got Radio Free Northwest, we've got leaflets, we've got stickers, we've got business cards, we've got little jewelry type toys now, we've got NVA coffee mugs, all of the things that you said that you wanted, and you said, oh, Harold, you're not really doing anything if you don't have an NVA coffee mug. Well, now we got those. You see, it all boils down to you guys. As far as hiding out goes, the idea is, oh, we're not really doing anything. And I just, you know, I sent an email a while back. Everybody's always looking for action, but not really. What they don't want action. What they want is to turn on their televisions and see somebody else taking action. And that I can't provide for you until such time as I have some help from you. Now, we are going to have a new manual for the party fairly soon, the new white book, 4th edition Northwest Migration Manual. I will let you know on here and on the internet when it's ready, and you can get your new copies. This manual will more or less walk you through it. And so from now on, anybody that wants to affiliate with the Northwest Front because they want action, you can have all the action you want. Just pick up that manual and follow it, but you're going to have to do it. This is something that I've been meaning to mention for some time. I have by now kind of reached the limit of what one man can do. I will try to do more. I will start on the second part of Freedom Sons. I will continue with Radio Free Northwest, hopefully expand it into a proper radio show. I'll continue to do what I can, but you're going to have to understand that there is a limit to what one man can do, and I'm within shouting distance of that limit now.
I don't know. I'm not hiding out in the Northwest because they all know where I am. So the thing is, as far as action, we pretty well tried all of the kind of street carnival stuff and the Hollywood Nazis and the publicity stunts. Right now, I think we've got to the point where it's just cell building structure. I mean, you're going to have to just start trying to recruit your neighbors, your friends, your enemies. I mean, anybody that seems like they're willing to talk, because I see that more and more nowadays. I mean, just regular people are starting to talk shit in public. Some of the things that I hear at work are just unbelievable, showing that people are waking up to the problem. And see, those are the new people. They're the ones who don't realize you can lose your job and get ostracized and have the old lady leave you and all that stuff. So they're willing to take action like we were willing to take action, you know, 10 years ago. So even though we know the repercussions, at this point, it's really too late because everybody's going to lose their job anyway because of the economy. So now's the time to start your own action, which is simply trying to spread the word to the people that you know personally. So then you don't have to be afraid of getting ratted out by the undercover agent or all that mumbo jumbo. So yeah, I'm all for action too, but it needs to be some logical, productive action. Personally, I always wanted to dress up in a Hollywood Nazi uniform myself, but when I got to the organization, they told me I couldn't do it anymore. I was really bummed out.
But I have completely, totally forgotten what I was going to say now. Yeah. So look, if you guys, every time you hear Radio Free Northwest that you like, if you will just pick the URL up off the website and post it a few places. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again until I'm blue in the face. There are millions of people out there who will support us, who will help the Northwest Front personally, who will help financially, who would be willing to pack the moving van and move here in a way that most of you apparently are not. They're out there. But the problem is they don't know we're here. Guys, if you want to help this cause, you can do it. You can do it with your computer. You can do it by word of mouth. You can do it by making your own literature, by making your own business cards. All you really need to do, and what I ask of all of you, is to let people know that we are here, because eventually when the white man in this country, on this continent, learns that there is an alternative, he will take it. But before he can do that, he's got to know that the alternative exists. People, that is what we've got to do. We have got to let our own people know that there is hope, there is an alternative. We got to let them know that we are here.
You know, actually, he's right. I mean, we need direct action, but not the kind of direct action that the anarchists are talking about. And I gave that diatribe about talking to people that you know. And there's a few things that we were doing in the old days that actually I think would work now. They didn't work in the old days because, I mean, what we were saying sounded crazy to everybody and they had no reason to believe us. But now that their world is falling apart, people actually are ready for a message. And so things like, actually now I'm thinking things like leafleting, stickers, like Harold said, just putting the URL, not only on the internet, but just posting it everywhere where people will see it, because people are curious, their world is shifting. And so really, I think if we went out and started doing the kind of the leafleting kind of activism we did back in the late 90s, I think it would have a much more chance of success simply because the audience is more receptive. But if people don't know it exists, they just don't know it. And the last thing is, what's that famous saying about nothing can resist an idea whose time has come?
Mightier than the tread of marching armies is the power of an idea whose time has come. And that's a quote from Victor Hugo.
Right. And so I'm telling you, the time has come for the Northwest Front, and we just have to get the message out. And I think, I'm positive at some point it's going to take off like wildfire anyway. That's what you can do. If you want to be active, just start throwing the flyers and pasting up stickers and posting the URL different places. We were just going over the program that tells you where all the hits are coming from. It's pretty interesting. Almost half of them are coming from other countries. We even had a couple from really unusual countries.
China, Thailand, Slovenia. We've gotten hits on our website from Africa, South America, literally the entire world. I don't think we've gotten one from Antarctica yet, but that's about it. Literally every place else, every continent. almost every country in one way or another we have gotten hits from on northwestfront.org. Yeah, it's getting out there. It's just not getting out there enough. Guys, if you will just let people know that we are here, let our own people know, let white people know that there is an alternative, you will have done your duty to the Northwest Republic. You know, it strikes me that I haven't gone medieval on your ass for a while, so this is Portcullis. By the way, that was a medieval dance number from 13th century Spain, Aragon to be precise. Normally, I would start my own primary rave at this point in the podcast, but we got so many audio files this week, I think we'll keep on with those. Now we're going to hear from Comrade John in Indiana, who has newly discovered the Northwest Imperative, and he's in his first flush of enthusiasm, so to speak. And I always like to hear from people like that.
Racial greetings, comrades. I'm somewhat new to the Northwest Front. I just discovered it a few months ago at the tender young age of 43. But as they say, better late than never. And having been involved in the pro-white movement to some extent in the last decade, I immediately recognize that the Northwest Front is the real deal. Everyone else in the so-called pro-white movement complains about the sorry lot of white people. I call it pessimism porn. They get white folks all up in a tizzy, telling them, we're screwed. Let's watch the sunset on the once white world. Their pessimism porn makes us feel that we're going extinct and there's nothing we can do to stop it. Let's be honest. Pessimism porn makes some of us mentally ill. All these guys do is complain till we're in a state of depression, but none of them talk about a solution. That's where the Northwest Imperative comes in. We identify the problem, but unlike most of those losers I mentioned above, the Northwest Imperative actually gives you the solution. Listen closely. Secession and formation of an independent white homeland is the only solution if we don't wish to go the way of the dinosaurs and the dodo. With that introduction at an end, let me get to the meat of my presentation, that being the upcoming racial civil war as the formerly United States of America dies of terminal multiculturalism. America will not survive multiculturalism. Let me repeat that. America will not survive multiculturalism. This brings me to a book you should have read by now, Civil War II by Tom Chittum, which was published in 1996 and which you can buy as an e-book from America First Books. That's America First Books for the small price of $9. Mr. Chittum, a Vietnam veteran and former mercenary, observed ethnic struggles in Rhodesia and Croatia from the barrel of a gun. He begins the book with these prophetic words, and I quote, America was born in blood. America suckled in blood. America gorged on blood and grew into a giant. And America will drown in blood. This is the specter that is haunting America, the specter of Civil War II, a second civil war that will shatter America into several new ethnically based nations. Many will denounce this truth as racist and as a call to violence. It is neither. Rather, it is the result of an objective examination of the historic, demographic, political, economic, and military developments that are relentlessly propelling America towards a second civil war. Simply and directly put, America will explode into tribal warfare in our lifetime and shatter into several new ethnically based nations. And as America breaks up, the very concept of multi-ethnic democracy will likewise be forever shattered. End of quote. Due to the influence of white conservatives who care only for conserving their money rather than their children's and grandchildren's happy and prosperous futures, and the Jews, the original nation wreckers, America in our day has become a multi-ethnic empire. All, I repeat all, of the multi-ethnic empires of the past, from the Roman Empire to the Habsburg Empire to Yugoslavia, have something in common. Their central authority collapsed. You might call it the crazy glue holding them together. Come to think about it, anybody who wants to forcefully hold together quarreling people of various races who have nothing in common but feelings of mutual loathing is crazy. I digress. History shows us that every one of the multicultural empires of the past collapsed and were replaced with homogeneous ethnostates. There have been no exceptions in the past, and Uncle Sam will not be the first exception. Chittum believes that Civil War II will most certainly begin in the Southwest. As we speak, Mexicans are illegally crossing our southern border like someone beat open a giant piñata. New Mexico was the first state to celebrate an outright Mexican majority. That was in 2006, and by 2030, the entire Southwest from Texas to California will fall to Mexican majorities. White people, especially the younger ones, are coming to understand that they have no future there. According to the Sacramento Bee, between 2000 and 2010, 200,000 whites left California and moved to Oregon and Washington. In 2010, the white population of California was down to 40%, from 50% in 1995. The government is doing nothing to stop the Mexican invasion. In fact, it is doing everything it can to entice Mexicans across the border. Abundant jobs, free welfare. Hey, we don't check for any citizenship, and any child born here is automatically an American citizen. Now, what better reason for a prospective mamacita of age 17 to be on our side of the border when her water breaks? Hell, the only thing we don't offer them yet is a lifetime supply of refried beans. Chittum points out that Civil War II is inevitable because everything the U.S. government does is pushing the concept forward. In its quest to become a so-called world nation, the United States has been pushing hardcore multicultural policies for decades, all designed to steal the inheritance of white children, to disinherit them of the very country their ancestors cut out of the wilderness. But this drug, multiculturalism, if you wish to call it that, A narcotic, which most of the white population is currently under its spell, is fatal in large doses. Your nation literally dies of blood poisoning. And in this altered state of mind, I'm talking about the state of mind created by imbibing the Jews media, which intentionally fails to notify people of the momentous and catastrophic demographic changes going on in America. The user is unaware of his plight. This reminds me of the new street drug in Russia called Krokodil. It's spelled like crocodile, but with two K's rather than two C's, and no final E. Check out the videos on YouTube and you'll be prepared to be grossed out. Krokodil is one of the most addictive substances ever created. With continued use, your skin painlessly dries out and you begin shedding it. And then the underlying connective tissue and muscle dries out and falls from your limbs, all painlessly. By the time some people seek treatment, the bones of their arms and legs are exposed. But there's no pain. Krokodil is said to be the drug that bites back. All of the damage it does to you is painless. You lose your limbs, but you feel no pain. This is the best analogy of multiculturalism I can think of. Multiculturalism, as it is projected in education and the Jews media, is a drug. It is intended to make a white person feel good or oblivious while he's giving up his country, his inheritance, these mud people of the third world. By the time the white masses finally wake up, we'll have lost two of our legs, that being the southeast and the southwest. As Tom Chittum stresses, everything the U.S. government does pushes Civil War II towards breaking out. In this light, giving free guns to Mexican gang members makes perfect sense. Everyone listening to this show knows that the Mexicans in our country already have a name picked out for their future breakaway republic, Aztlan. The demographic situation in the southeast is mirroring the southwest, except the wild animals in question are niggers, not latinos. If there's one thing you should have learned by now about niggers, it's this. The only thing niggers are really good at is making more niggers. And by the mid part of this century, niggers will be the majority in every southeastern state from Maryland to Louisiana. As of the 2010 census, niggers were 38% of the population in Mississippi, 32% in Louisiana, 31% in Georgia, 29% in Maryland, 28% in South Carolina, and so forth. Did I say a black majority by mid-century? I'm revising that to 20 years hence. As the white population gets smaller and smaller in both the southeast and the southwest, life will become increasingly impossible for them. It will become a virtual hell. With racist affirmative action, all the jobs will go to the shitskins. I don't care how small of a minority whites become. White minorities will never get affirmative action. Trust me, I once lived in a black majority city. And then speak of the crime. Just look at all the black flash mobs we've seen this summer. They've been occurring all over the country. And if any of the white victims have had proper racial sense beat into them, it was worth cutting down the maple trees to make baseball bats. I'm sad to say that a lot of whites don't learn the way we do. They need a more confrontational style of education, like the School of Hard Knocks. I notice that some flash mobs are occurring in very white places like the State Fair in Wisconsin, a state whose population is 81% white and only 6% black. If niggers already feel safe group hunting whites in a place like Wisconsin in 2011, all I have to say is it won't be long till they start hunting whites like it's open game season in the already highly niggerfied southeast. I'm confident in saying that by 2030 niggers will be hunting white people like polar bears. And with all the increasing nigger affirmative action, police and judges, they might just get away with it scot-free. Remember what O.J. Simpson said, Caucasians, the other white meat. Right now I'm talking to you from overwhelmingly white southern Indiana. I myself am already a refugee. I'm from the eastern part of Virginia, the Chesapeake Bay area. That's where I grew up. My parents are natives of Baltimore, now called Baltmo. Now it's 64% black, and from what I hear, it's the venereal disease capital of America. During the past decades, I've noticed my part of Virginia getting darker and darker. I had no intention of sending my young children to the local elementary school that was 70% black, where the kiddies study this fake black history from September the 1st till June the 15th. Not my children. So 5 years ago, we moved to southern Indiana, and my kids now go to a 98% white school, rated 5 stars by the Indiana Board of Education. 5 years ago, there was no Northwest Front, and I, like the majority of racially conscious whites, even today, had never heard of the Butler Plan. So for everyone not residing in the homeland now, your job is twofold. One, start planning your move, obvious. And two, post Northwest URLs everywhere on the web, especially where young people hang out. You know, justinbieber.org, vampiresrus.com. I'm being serious. Just pick out a few big sites and keep posting your URLs there time and time again. My message to all of you listening who live in the Southeast or the Southwest is, quote, the writing is on the wall, end of quotes. Leave now while it's still safe and you can get a good return on selling your home. Or wait 20 years and find that the animals are running the zoo and no one wants to buy your house for even half the price you originally paid. Bottom line is that as a white person, you have no future in the regions which will most assuredly by mid-century make up the new ethnic states of Aztlan and Booga Booga Land. No insult meant to the African Americans. When you brothers and sisters finally tell me the name of your proposed ethno-state, I'll be happy to quit calling it Booga Booga Land. Let me be blunt. If you're listening, you already know that the real deal is the Pacific Northwest. And it's called, or rather will be called, the Northwest American Republic. So don't be tempted to move to New Hampshire or Indiana or Iowa or South Dakota. At this point in the game, we can't afford to scatter ourselves and our talent all over the still habitable northern states. No halfway jobs. All of us race-conscious whites need to be in one place where we will give Zog the biggest bang for the buck, literally. I like to use the term concentration camp in regards to the Pacific Northwest. We need to concentrate all of our talent, manpower, creativity, money, and brute force into one camp. When we do this, we will be invincible, and a feeble, overstretched Zog will fall like a paper tiger, as best illustrated in Harold's novels. So it's time to go all the way to the homeland, my brothers and sisters. In the 1990 sci-fi film Total Recall about a colony on Mars, Arnold Schwarzenegger's character Hauser said, "Just get your ass to Mars." Well, I'm telling you, just get your ass to the homeland. I'll be out there in due time with my family in tow, but if you are a single white person, and particularly if you're living in an area slated to revert back to third world status, you need to start making your relocation plans now. Well, my time is at an end. Perhaps in a future recording I'll talk more about the bloody details of Civil War II, where the armies will come from, the weapons, the tactics, and so forth. Chittum wrote the book back in 1996, and at that time there was no Northwest Front. When I first read the book, years ago, I had a good feeling that the white man would take a healthy share of Uncle Sam's carcass when the shit hits the fan. But now seeing the professionalism of the Northwest Front, I know we will be victorious. Thank you for your attention. Hail to the Northwest American Republic. Ex gladio libertas.
Okay, now, without trying to rain on John's parade at all, no disrespect of any kind intended, I think we're all aware that when it comes to actually carrying out Northwest migration, especially where there is a spouse and children involved and the necessity to sell a house, in real life it's very much a case of many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. Now, I'd like to ask John to send us regular updates over the next year or so, possibly a little shorter files, by the way. And that's not just for John, that's for everybody. The optimum length for your audio files is between 5 and 7 minutes. Anyway, perhaps John could send us regular updates on his own Northwest migration so that we can do a kind of audio documentary on the process, like telling us what happens the first time he broaches the subject to his wife, that kind of thing. No, I'm not trying to be funny here. A lot of guys are really set on fire when they first read the Northwest novels, and they get all enthused, and then when they begin the process of homecoming in the real world, they discover something the novels don't tell you, and that is that looking for a new job and a new home in a far-off land when we're in the middle of a depression is hard. I'd like to hear not only from John, but from others of you who were enthusiastically converted to the concept of Northwest migration by my novels, or by these podcasts, or by our northwestfront.org website. And then I'd like to hear what happened when you got that first bucket of cold water thrown in your face, possibly by a hostile spouse, or by economic realities, or whatever. I think it would be helpful if we discuss the obstacles in your way when you try to come home and how to overcome them. Now, I know that a lot of people start the process of coming home with the best of intentions, and yet they end up sitting back on the couch and flipping the remote, or sitting back behind the computer clicking on the mouse instead of loading the cardboard cartons into the U-Haul. So maybe John and a few others of you out there who are beginning the process can give us a kind of running documentary of all the practical issues that you face when you're coming home. And I'm sure this program and its listeners can at least give you a moral support system, if nothing else, to get you on your way. This is Chris Whitley. And by the way, no, Chris Whitley was not a nigger. I checked his album cover before I played the song. This being the movement, I figured I better mention that. Okay, this is usually where I tack on my ending monologue in the form of some fiery tirade telling all you white people to pull your socks up and come home to the Northwest. But I'm not going to do that today. Today I'm going to talk about something that will probably bore most of you listeners to tears, and that's economics. But there's a reason that I'm talking about that, because it's economics which will eventually make this system collapse and offer us our window of opportunity for freedom here in the Northwest. Seriously, people, you guys need to understand how this little house of cards works, because you're going to have to find some way to use it to free our people when the time comes. Now here's the Cliff Notes version. A few weeks ago, Axis Sally made the appropriate quote on this program from Alexis de Tocqueville, whom I will paraphrase here. De Tocqueville said something to the effect that democracy never lasts long. It always fails when men discover that they can use democracy to vote themselves money from the public funds. Now, for several generations now, Western democracies in general, and the United States in particular, have been spending more money than they take in every year in taxes. How have they been doing this? Simple. Every year when the government falls short, it borrows money from the big international banks, meaning the Jews. The banks usually lend this money by buying what's called T-bills, which are basically IOUs from the United States government printed up on heavy, expensive quality paper with all kinds of colored ink and fancy scrollwork, so forth and so on. There are now untold billions and trillions of dollars circulating out there all over the world, especially in China, in the form of T-bills, IOUs that eventually the United States is going to have to pay off in some form or another. Now, why all of the spending like drunken sailors for the past 70 years or so? Basically, the Western world went into hock to the Jewish loan sharks in order to win World War II, and we've never gotten out of hock to them. Jewish outfits like Goldman Sachs and the Rothschilds. The Jews have been running one huge Bernie Madoff-style Ponzi scheme on all of us so that Western liberal democracies can pay for their versions of the social welfare state, wherein the people are essentially bribed to be quiet and obedient and not overthrow the government's stanky ass. The liberal and Zionist ruling elites in Western countries, and especially in America, have been making what amount to payoffs. Bribes to special interest groups like unions and large corporations and assorted lobbies in Congress and so-called community organizing groups led by people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, who specialize in racial shakedowns, in order to gain their political support within the democratic system. Now, these governments, and especially the U.S. government, have also been shelling out huge sums of money every year in the form of welfare and dole and Head Start and affirmative action and other special benefits, which amount to bribes to black and brown minorities to stop them from rioting and upsetting the whole rowboat. Although sometimes those bribes don't work, as we saw with the nigger rioting in the U.K. and with the flash mobs in the USA over the past summer. The amount of money that all of these liberal and Zionist regimes, but the U.S. in particular, spends on basically keeping themselves in power through bribery, long ago began to exceed the amount of money they take in through taxation every year. And yet liberals are like shopaholic valley girls. They seem to be completely mentally and emotionally incapable of cutting back their spending. Or possibly it's because they just plain can't cut spending because there are black and brown minorities and special interest groups like the Teachers Union, NEA, who have become accustomed to getting massive subsidies from the government, and any attempt to stop or cut back the payments will cause a riot, either politically or quite literally. Now, can you imagine what would happen in places like Atlanta and Detroit and Los Angeles if one month the welfare direct deposits to the EBT card accounts didn't arrive? The liberals, and indeed the whole system, can't cut spending. They're riding the back of the tiger, and if they don't keep shoveling out those billions of dollars every month in bribes, then they'll fall off and the tiger will tear them to pieces. So let's just take that as read. Liberal democratic government either cannot or will not control the lunatic spending. Like any junkie, they have to have more and more money every year to feed their habit. And so what do? They borrow from the big banks at interest. Okay, it's way more complex than that. Like I said, this is the Cliff Notes version, but basically it's like running up any credit card. Eventually, you max it out. Now, to make a long and incredibly complicated story as short as possible. There is now no more money to be borrowed, unless, of course, Obongo calls his little Jewish friend, Ben Bernanke, over at the Federal Reserve and has him fire up the printing presses and make some more. Which is exactly what has been happening with what these assholes refer to as quantitative easing. Remember those T-bills, those government IOUs I was just talking about? Well, since we can't pay them off in real money, i.e. money that we take in from taxation, what the Federal Reserve is doing is printing money for the express purpose of buying up the T-bills, taking them out of circulation and then issuing more T-bills so that the United States can borrow more money from the banks. That'll be the same funny money that the Federal Reserve just printed to pay off the old T-bills. Now you see what they're doing. It's a bubble that they're just filling with more and more air. There's no real money in there anywhere. No real production, no real economic activity. It's just to keep the system going and keep the bribes getting paid out every month. But the problem is that at some point, somebody realizes that all those lovely green $100 bills in the vault are nothing but freshly printed paper, worth nothing. And they start demanding gold, or silver, or land, or in the case of the Chinese, foreclosing on what's left of our port facilities and factories, taking the means of production physically and shipping them off to Hunan province or wherever, so forth and so on. Now, this is that balloon going up that right-wingers have been talking about for so long. The moment when all of a sudden the almighty dollar is no longer almighty because everyone in the country realizes that the United States government and the Jews who run it have tricked and defrauded us all. The point where all of a sudden the government of the United States and the state police and the local sheriff's department can no longer pay their steroid-pumped muscle men to spy on us and arrest us and perjure themselves in court to silence us. I know some people may think that I'm obsessed with the FBI and the Secret Service and the cops, but they are an essential part of this whole equation. Remove them, and the whole ball of wax really will finally fall apart. Now, let me ask you something. Without the muscle men of the Bureau in their black body armor and their full autos that they so love to stick in children's faces, and without the bulging steroid-pumped muscles of your Leon Sorrell's types and the local police to prop them up and protect them from the consequences of their own behavior, how long do you think the slithering reptiles and squishy rodents who rule us would last? How long do you think certain judges would last if they had no muscle man deputies pumped up on steroids to drag people to prison for contempt of court just on their say-so? How long do you think certain legislators and politicians would last if they had no muscle men in suits with guns under their jackets to drive them around and protect them and their spoiled little princesses when they go to their stables on the Hamptons to ride their horsey? How long do you think any attorney in the country would last if he or she couldn't pick up the phone and call on some steroid-pumped muscle men with 9mm from the local police to protect them when the clients they robbed and betrayed came calling? How long do you think America would last if these demon-possessed creatures in human form who rule us could not command men with guns who are willing to kill and maim and imprison on their say-so for money? Now, we may not be able to reach these muscle men now. Some of them we probably won't ever be able to reach. Now, so long as their paychecks keep on landing in the bank every month via that direct deposit, so long as they and their families get medical insurance when no one else has it, most of them will stay bought. But what about when the direct deposit doesn't arrive because the government finally can't borrow any more money? Or when they try to print more and everybody realizes that they're being paid in green toilet paper? People, you want to know when our window of opportunity will arrive? When the revolution will come? Well, that's when. When America can no longer pay the muscle men in the silk suits and the blue uniforms. That is the moment that we have to prepare for. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha on the pile. freedom.
Stands up, rising on.